The 82-game preseason is in the books, and it's finally time for the real season. Don't miss out on any of the NBA playoff action at DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NBA. From the play-in tournament through the finals, DraftKings Sportsbook has you covered with same-game parlays, live betting, odds boosts, and so much more. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app and use code Ross. New customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets instantly. That's code Ross, only on DraftKings. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for problem gambling. Call 888-789-777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort in Kansas, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 168 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/football for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources.
You're listening to DraftKings Network.
If you like to make your NFL games a little bit more interesting, you've come to the right place. It's the Even Money Podcast with Ross Tucker and Steve Fezzik.
Well, we don't get very many opportunities to see each other in person, but for those of you watching us on YouTube, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL, it is great to see the one, the only Steve Fezzik, my co-host for what, one of the top three NFL betting podcasts in the world, at least in the country, in person here in Las Vegas. Yes, we did record this earlier. Steve and I are recording this from Radio Row at the Super Bowl. It was in Vegas, so I had to get a chance to talk to Steve, see him in person. And then this is one that we'll use either when Steve's on vacation in the off season or I'm on vacation and we want to have some new content for you guys here on the Even Money Podcast. So I guess I want to start, Steve. I don't really know your background. Like, I know that you're from, like, the Dayton area. I know you went to Northwestern. I know you were in insurance, and then you became a professional bettor. So I want to take a step further back because I think it, you know, first of all, people are really interested in you. People are really interested in successful professional bettors, period, right? Like, they want to know more about them. So I feel like I'm like Oprah or like Barbara Walters. So take me back to the beginning, Stephen. Take me back to how things started for you. You know, what kind of athlete were you? And when did you first even think about or know about betting on a sporting event?
Sure. And it's kind of like the old Fat Albert show, right? But be careful. If you're not careful, you pay attention. You might learn something here. So I'm in Dayton, Ohio. I grow up, and I'm just a nerd, all right? I'm a math geek. I'm taking, you know, the math classes. I'm on the chess team, and I actually excelled at chess.
I bet.
I was a state runner-up high school. So I was not much of an athlete, but I love sports, all right? And I liked playing basketball. I was one of those guys. I needed Ross Tucker in my high school. I needed one smart guy to, like, take me to the open gyms and stuff because I would shoot baskets all the time, and I just never was, like, organized sports, all right? So if I had done that, I think I would have gotten into it earlier, but I didn't, you know, in high school. So then I go to college. I go to Northwestern. Play on the chess.
So you had really, really good grades to be able to get in Northwestern, solely based on your academic merit, no athletic training like that.
Yes, I was on the chess team. No scholarships there. In fact, one story, I played in the Pan American Games for Northwestern chess, and I played against a guy from Rhode Island who was better than me. He was almost a master, all right? So he was rated higher.
How do you become a master? Like, what does master mean?
It's a rating where you have to be a 2200, and basically it means you have become, it's kind of like a black belt in karate. Like, there's, like, you can have, like, four black belts, you know, and, like,
yeah,
and the like. But it's kind of like the minimum to be really, really good at chess is to be a master. I never made master. I could have if I stayed with chess, but I played this dude.
Who determines that?
It's all performance enhanced. It's all based upon how you do over the board. And when you beat a guy that's equal to you, your rating goes up or down. It's kind of like a Sagarin rating for college basketball teams.
Right.
So I played a dude from Rhode Island who told me he was on scholarship. And I was like, it was like talk about bulletin board material. You know, it's like, this guy's on scholarship. He's no better than me, or he's a little better than me. So I remember I won that game. So that was like a key win. But I was like, my God, this physics lab, chemistry lab, there's too much. It takes too much time. I can't be on the chess team. I got to like diversify. And I met a real good friend, and he, Bruce McDonald, and he introduced me to like the gym. And I would go open gyms and play like and the like. And he was like, oh, you got to. He was a power lifter. And so I went with them, and he showed me like how to do all these weights. And what was amazing, Ross, is how much it helped to suddenly, instead of being able to bench, you know, 115 pounds, a year and a half later, I'm benching 225. And now I'm getting all the rebounds. Now I'm able to push guys out of the paint. Now I'm the guy, 6 foot, that's guarding the 6'5 center, and I'm just making his life miserable because I'm just moving him out of the paint. When he doesn't have the ball, I'm fouling him like crazy. You know, I'm getting rebounds, and so... So I love now that I was playing sports and I was pretty good at it. Didn't just for the NBA. I mean, you're professional. Did they ever ask you to play like on intramurals?
Oh, I played intramural basketball
all the time. Yeah. You just dominate, right? Basketball.
That was like my favorite sport. At Princeton, we never had a winning season, unfortunately. Uh-huh. So like my most successful sport was probably intramural basketball. And it's funny because if you ever would like ask my Princeton football teammates, you know, people say to them, so your buddy Ross Tucker like made the NFL, like was he just so good? Like, because any Ivy League player is going to be sort of fascinated by the idea that, you know, other Ivy League players made the NFL, like how good was he? And what they usually tell people is, well, he was 295 pounds and he was the point guard of our intramural basketball team.
Wow.
Like he could bring the ball up, like that was what he did. And I think that that's one of the things that kind of jumps out to people. But anyway, yes, I loved intramural basketball for sure.
Yeah, and we had Jack Vandenberg was like our center my freshman year. And he was like this big lineman that was 6'8", that was just like a rock in the center. And then he unfortunately couldn't make like our playoff game. Of course, we lost. But then, you know, fast forwarding, I'm really good at math, probability statistics. I'm an engineer, but I can't really put anything together. I'm like, what am I going to do for a living? And a friend of mine, Dan Winslow, was an actuary. And he says, Steve, you'd be great at this. It's all math and probability. It's all forecasting. It's projections where you calculate the probabilities of how long people are going to live for like life insurance pricing, how likely someone is to become disabled, how likely they are to leave a company, et cetera. So then I moved on and I became an actuary at several companies. And I didn't like the consulting route. I liked the insurance company route ultimately better. And so I wound up at Transamerica working in the pension department. We would do projections for our clients. How much money do you have to contribute to make sure the pension is properly funded? And I really enjoyed my time there as a vice president at Transamerica downtown LA, really close to the Staples Center. It was the Staples Center got built.
Okay.
All right, so there's this big black rectangular building three blocks from the Staples Center. And they had a gym there. I love that. And so what happens is during the 90s, I discover a loophole, if you will, in sports betting, specifically.
Well, when did you first start betting, though? That's kind of what I'm trying to get at.
Yeah, so I played blackjack, a little blackjack in the late 80s. You know,
when was that?
This is
high school, college?
So it's like 88 to 91. I'm playing blackjack, so I'm out of college. I graduate 86, and I very limited success, frankly, playing blackjack. You know, I read all the books and practiced, and it was just never really panned out well. I mean, basically broke even, and so gambling kind of gets put on the back burner until like 1992. I still remember. So I go and I look at these parlay cards, and everyone in the world said, sucker bets, total sucker bets. Nobody plays parlays. Nobody plays parlay cards. Can't beat those. And then I look at the back of them. What's this? Northwestern plus 20.5 against Illinois. And I'm like, no, Northwestern's catching only 17. They're not getting 20.5. They're like, oh, but if you play them on the card, you get the printed number on Wednesday, whatever number they print, that's the number that's locked in, it's stale. So you get to play against the number. And I'm like, I discovered closing line value long before it was vogue. And I was like, well, if I can play all these numbers, I don't even have to handicap. I'm just going to play the lines that are off by 3 points and mix and match them and play a whole bunch of it. Turns out the math worked out. It was better to play 6 and 8 and 10 team parlays. So, I'm meeting with friends about this. I'm like, this is like one of the greatest opportunities ever. And they're like, no, nobody wins. They wouldn't even do the math. So I'm playing, and I'm the one guy, like, from the get-go. People say you got to invest like 5 years to learn how to win sports betting and you got to pay your dues. I was like RG3, man. I was like going in and it was like amazing how, I mean, because when I had a winning week, it wasn't like, you know, I made 20%. I would make like 800% because I was hitting six teamers paying 54 to one. I was hitting eight teamers that were
okay,
200
so you're
to
living
one.
In LA.
So I'm commuting.
Working for Transamerica.
Yes.
And you're commuting.
Yes. And it's very hard. I can't do it every weekend. I'm an executive, right? So I'm flying out on Friday afternoon. All right. And
flying from LA to Vegas.
Right. It was before 9/11. So it basically, I would park, I would leave at like noon. All right. When I would take Friday afternoon off, I would arrive like at LAX at 12:45. I changed clothes in the parking lot. Literally, it's like one time someone drove by and they said, "What's the matter? Superman couldn't find a phone booth?" You know, so boom, I'd have a 1:30. I'd make it every time. I'd be on 1:30 Southwest Terminal 1, you know, arrive in Vegas 2:30 and rent a car and boom. And I was running around driving to each and every casino, scooping up their parlay cards, you know, like, okay, oh, line's 2.5 on this game. I'm getting +3.5. Okay, I'm going to play that on a whole bunch of them. You know, basically, as
grabbing the parlay cards on Friday that were stale from Wednesday's number.
Yes. And there was,
when they printed them.
And there was no sense of urgency, mind you, because I had all weekend to play. So basically, a lot of times I was just picking up the cards. And then I had like a stack of eight of them late Friday or early, late afternoon, early evening. I'd fill them all out in my hotel room. And then I would drive, like, I'd leave like at 8 o'clock at night and I'd go to each and every property. They had different numbers at different places. And I'm like, oh, I can play the Bengals +3.5 over here. The Bengals were playing the Browns. But this place has the Browns -2.5. So here's the place I play my Browns -2.5 and playing all the college moves. And then Saturday morning, there'd be even more moves. And I'm like, oh, I'll take Air Force +7.5. The line on that game's 5. You know, I'll start pounding. Let me throw in a whole bunch of Air Force, you know, mixed and matched with other things. And so I'd have a huge stack of parlay cards. And I was dumb enough back then, I wanted to have a life. So I would pretty much wrap up Saturday at 4 in the afternoon, and I would flight back, and I'd be home by Saturday night. I would have this huge stack of parlay cards, and I'd be grading them Saturday night. The college games would be like, loser, lose. Most of them would lose, you know, because I'm playing all these teams. And then I have a stack going into Sunday, and I try to figure out what my positions were and the like, and I treated it very much like a business. It wasn't very good for my social life because it took up every weekend, and finally I expanded, and by the late 90s.
But you were winning.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
so then how do you cash the parlay card the next week?
Yeah, exactly. I'd come back the next week and
be. And what were the limits on those?
Oh, you play whatever you want. They're sucker bets. And that was the beauty. You could do whatever you wanted. You know, the first guy.
You could put whatever you wanted on the parlay card.
Yeah. I remember walking up with a stack. I went to like in Reno at the Cal Neve. I remember walking up with a stack of $90, like 40 of them. I was wrong. It just run up. Now, if I did that, like literally by the third one, they'd be like, we can't take these. Are you kidding me? You know, they would deny me across the board. I got kicked out of the South Point, true story, like 3 years ago because I played 10 $90 three-team cards on March Madness. So think about that. I got kicked out for playing $900 in action. I was putting $9,000 through at multiple properties. So that was like one of the greatest opportunities of all time. Now, the first guy, give him credit, Joe Lupo. I think he's the head man now at the Hard Rock. Used to be the Mirage. What was the Mirage? And they just became the Hard Rock. I think he's the head man. He was running the Stardust sportsbook back in the late 90s. And he was the first guy. He's just said, you know, enough of this. He was the first guy to figure out. Everyone says these are sucker bets. They're not sucker bets. And Steve, I don't like the way you play. Can't play here anymore. That was the first guy.
So then what'd you do?
I made some friends. I got some other guys. I expanded. And I started to look around different parts of Nevada. I was like, okay, Vegas, the word kind of got around. The bookmakers talk, be careful, don't play, don't let people play too many of these. I don't know if they knew so much that we had that big of an edge versus they knew, hey, if all the key games won, that their liability would explode. Because whether it was you or me or anyone sharp, we were all going to play like the same games.
Right.
Because we'd land on those numbers that were off. So we start going to places. Heck, from Prim, Nevada, to Reno, to Tahoe, and ultimately to Wendover, Nevada, which is like on the border of Utah. And it turned out Wendover had like one of the greatest parlay cards in the history of the world. And so that's another story. That's a book to be written. We blew up Wendover one weekend. So we beat Wendover out of like 500,000 one weekend. And that was the end of Wendover having independent sports books. They immediately said, that's it. Sayonara, we're gonna outsource it. Yes.
That is incredible. And so then when did you end up going full time?
2001. So right after 9/11, I said, it's time. I'm making more per hour. I'm having more fun. Let me go ahead and do this full time.
And you're still full time at Transamerica.
Yes.
And did you have a, were you married yet?
No, I just met my wife, in fact.
So when you met your wife, what did you tell her you do for a living?
Oh, I was a vice president for Transamerica, and I go and bet sports, you know, I try not to advertise that because people perceive that as like, oh, he's got a gambling problem. People didn't understand.
Right.
Know? Yeah.
Well, then what did she say when she found out?
She kind of helped me with some of the parlay cards. She figured out pretty quickly that things that I had the edge. So
really?
And I was lucky.
So wait a minute, you were still just doing parlay cards though?
Yes. Yeah, I mean, because the parlay card, the advantage in parlay cards, even though I was getting kicked out of some places, it was so much higher than everything else. Right around the early 2000s, it became almost impossible to play those, and I had to expand to other things, including playing all the sports contests in town. And I told people when I was playing the sports contests, I remember in the mid-2000s, I told them, I think my ROI on this is like over 100%, and people were like laughing at me. They're like, yeah, you know, you're smoking crack. You know, it's like 100%. There's no way it's 100%. Well, I was wrong. It was really more like plus 300%, you know, and finally, like it took a few years, but finally 2008, 2009, I had my home run contest years where I won like five contests, famously the Westgate. I won the Super Contest twice, but I won the South Point Contest twice also. So I was having like unlimited success. And I got to be honest, this probably happens with football players too, where you happen to Rocky in Rocky III, right? Where you start knocking out enough opponents. And you start getting civilized. And I think it probably hurt me to do so well that I was like, oh, I'm just going to just keep, you know, keep winning. And it got a lot harder.
Oh, you had so much early success. You just assumed you were that good. And that's how it would be.
And I probably ran better than God a few of those years, got lucky and fortunate. And all of a sudden, it's like 2012. And now I can't play parlay cards anymore. No one will let me play them. And the contests are getting harder to win because more people are doing what I'm doing. So,
right.
I had some lean years, 2012 to 2016, where I'm transitioning over into just straight betting. And it's so much harder to win straight betting games than it is, you know, playing some of these other techniques.
Interesting. Okay. So then, what turned it around 2016?
Live betting. They started to let me bet while the games were going on. And I got to be honest, that's where my biggest edges are, to be able to play. If I'm watching a game, college basketball, NFL, college football, there's certain situations that are just incredibly good. I'll give an example. College football, let's say there's a 40-mile-an-hour tailwind, okay?
Yeah.
And Rutgers is hosting Michigan State. And Rutgers gets annihilated because they're going into the wind the whole first quarter. A football player, you know this. You know, and having, you know, played intramurals at Northwestern, I can tell you we once lost a game. We won the coin toss. We said, we'll take the ball. We were dead. We were going into the wind on the lake fill. We were going into a 30-mile-an-hour wind the entire game because our opponent went ahead and said, we'll play defense. We'll take the wind in the second half. And so you had no chance. And so, like, in this case, so Rutgers is trailing 14-0 at the end of the first quarter. They can't move the ball at all. Everyone who's like looking at the box score says total complete mismatch, and then Rutgers is catching three in the second quarter. Well, they should be favored in the second quarter because now they're getting the win.
So you were awesome on parlay cards, then you were great on contests early, and then you kind of got in a rut there, some lean years, and then live betting was what was able to take you over the top again. Is that the case still now in 2024?
Pretty much. I mean, I've gotten much better in my personal handicapping. But a lot of that is having a network of people, you know, that I'm coordinating with, interacting with. And I joke, like, in college football, I hit 59% this year. I had a great college football year. And my joke is, I can't name a player. I literally, like, and the scary thing is I'm watching the games nonstop all the time, but I'm not paying any attention. I'm just looking at the box score, you know, for the team stats, and I'm looking at the weather. And I always try to focus on games with bad weather. That's, you know, that is absolutely the way to go because of the type of advantages that I just mentioned.
How do you work on the live betting? Like, do you give that out to your clients?
I'll give it out at half
fast.
It's
right?
Too fast. I'll give out. I give them a loser. I give them the Idaho second half over. Didn't come close last night, but it's too fast. Yeah, they won't have time.
Paul texted me about that. Said to ask you about that.
Yeah, it was, I don't mind disclosing. Idaho was favored, and they're down 20 to 37.5. So it was one of those situations.
They were down by 17.
They're down 17. So when the better team is down like 20 points at half, it is rarely wrong to back the over. It makes sense because usually the better team, they're not just going to give up. If they were a big underdog, they're like, oh, it's not our day. But if you're the better team, all right, half court trap, full court press. In other words, prove it. The other team has to prove it to beat you. Well, turns out Idaho wasn't better than the other team, so they didn't score in the first 10 minutes of the second half. So they were cooked, and they were down 20, and they just gave up.
Got it. And so now,
I say Idaho. It's Idaho's opponent.
Whatever. So now, by the time people are listening to this, this, they won't even remember anyway. So, but now you feel like you're in a pretty good groove.
Oh, absolutely, absolutely. And then this past year, I had a really good contest year again. So that was I had like, I, it's funny on my website. I said I got 1 million in contest wins, and I'm like, boy, I've been saying that for like 6 years. I haven't won very much lately, you know, and now it's 1.5 million after this past year. So I had a really good contest year, caught a piece, got lucky, became an investor with one of the survivor people and consulted with him, and we managed to make it to the finish line. Greg Jones won the survivor. I was just along for the ride, giving some consulting advice, but ultimately got a $400,000 paycheck from that. So that was very cool.
That is awesome. Love this conversation, Steve. Fantastic.
Thank you, Ross.
Man, I really enjoyed that, Steve. I love hearing your background and going through high school and college and how you got into it. I'm sure a bunch of our longtime listeners or the people that watch us, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL, enjoyed that as well. Maybe as much as I enjoy drinking Labatt Blue Lights, whether it's with my friends or family. Man, I love that beer. Always enjoy responsibly. Beer, Labatt USA, Buffalo, New York. So we'll talk about March Madness hot and heavy next week, Steve. I mean, that's obviously going to be the primary topic, the NCAA tournament, March Madness. But the bracket does come out on Sunday. So is there anything that should be noted for when the bracket comes out on Sunday? I know last week we talked about some of these conference tournaments and you gave your tips there. But Sunday, bracket comes out. Is there any immediate action that needs to be taken?
I always look towards geography. I've looked towards hidden home court advantages. Does a team play close to home and they're going to be able to represent themselves much better? Now, it's obvious when they're in their home state, but sometimes it's in an adjacent state, but so close by that they're going to have more fans there than their opponent. And I'm scatterbrained. I'm all over the place. It's like the movie The Firm, where the guy's like, somebody get me a map of Louisiana, where I'm trying to find where these teams are playing.
Got it. Okay, so that's the thing that jumps out to you when you start. All right, what about, Steve, you know, I was actually out there for my bachelor party, which happened to be March Madness weekend a long, long time ago. That would have been 2005. I know a lot of people go out to Vegas for the NCAA tournament, March Madness, especially the first weekend. Any tips?
Yes. First and foremost, I got to recommend Circa. And the reason being, you're going to go for March Madness, you're going to Vegas, why not stay at a sports book? I'll recommend three that focuses on sports betting. So they have big venues so they can accommodate all the crowds, and Circa Sports uniquely qualified for two reasons. One, they're super all in on the sports betting. Two, they have a Circa Swim venue outside, and global warming. Back in 2004, when you had your bachelor party, the planet was cold. Now it's warm. And guess what? This is the latest March Madness has ever started, meaning I'm going to assume there's going to be good outdoor weather and no better place than Circa Swim to see the games. Ross, you've been there. What do you think?
Unbelievable. Like, just unbelievable. I can't believe it's a real place. I was there the Wednesday of Super Bowl week. That's where we got together with the DraftKings crew and you know, DraftKings content. And I mean, I couldn't believe the sports book itself. I mean, I've seen sports books before. Nothing like that. And then the Circa swim, like, you could just sit there in the pool all day and just watch the games that you have bets. I mean, like, you have a drink, you're in the pool watching a huge screen of a game you have a bet on. Like, Steve, that's living. L-I-V-I-N, living.
Absolutely. Now, that is a high-end sports book. All right. Everything's a little more expensive, but worth it. If you're looking for old school, you know what? Both the South Point and the Westgate in Las Vegas, they have sports books that are a big part of the revenue for the overall casino. They focus on sports betting. And so Jay Cornegay over at the Westgate, Chrissy Andrews over at the South Point, both do an outstanding job, open up a big showroom, extra room to see all the games. I would highly recommend, if you don't want to get gouged on the strip, have to pay $250 or $500 just to sit in a sports book, Westgate, South Point. Yeah, the pool's not as good, but the rest is pretty darn good old Vegas.
I love it, Steve. Good tips. Already excited for next week with some of your thoughts on the NCAA tournament, March Madness. Check him out on social at Fezzik Sports. I'm at Ross Tucker NFL. We are at Ross Tucker Pod. Love those of you that check us out on YouTube, youtube.com/RossTuckerNFL. Make sure you're a patron to be getting Steve's bets, patreon.com/RT Media. Other than that, hope everybody has a terrific weekend. Good luck, everybody. Hope you guys win some money.
Thanks for tuning in to Even Money. Make sure to also check out the Ross Tucker Football Podcast, Fantasy Feast, and College Draft, all on the DraftKings Network, YouTube, or subscribe to the podcast on your favorite platform.